I will note that we do have a quorum present. All right, members. We talk so often in this committee about the housing shortage and the need for increasing supply. This week's hearings will focus on zoning and land use reforms intended to increase development and bring down housing costs across the spectrum. Today, we will start with the Minnesota Starter Homes Act, co-presented by Chair Port and Senator Rasmussen. So we will begin with Senate File 2229. And Senator Port, if you are ready, you may please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. Hi, members. I am delighted to be here with you to present this bill. A little bit of background on this bill. Last year, we brought a collection of zoning and land use reform bills to the legislature and had a robust discussion throughout the year in both the House and the Senate. None of the bills passed, but we had many good conversations. And through the interim, over the last year, we have continuously met with stakeholders in the group from, you know, the coalition that has been working towards zoning and land use reform, and also folks who had concerns about the bills that we brought. We worked with city groups from the League to Greater Minnesota Cities to the Small Cities groups, as well as Neighbors for More Neighbors, the Sierra Club, and a number of other stakeholders. Through those discussions over the last 8 months or so, we have created a new collection of bills, and this is the first of those, the Minnesota Starter Homes Act. When we think about this legislation, I really think about it in the context that we have a housing crisis in Minnesota. We are over 100,000 homes short for what we need in our state, and part of the reason for that is land use and zoning restrictions that make it difficult or more expensive to build homes in this state. Right now, the median cost of a new single-family home in the state of Minnesota is over $500,000. There is no city in Minnesota where the median income can afford a medium home price. Those are problems that we can do work to fix, and this bill is one of the main starts of that. Chair Bolden, if we could, I would like to move the A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment that puts the bill in the form that we want it and responds to some of the concerns from the city groups.
Chair Port, the A1 amendment. Members, it is in your packets. All those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes and the amendment is adopted. Senator Port.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. If we could, I'd like if we could go to testimony, and then when my co-author arrives as well, we'll go through a walkthrough of the bill.
Very good. We will move to testimony. Just a note that testifiers have been notified because we have lots of testifiers, which is excellent. We want to hear from everyone. So we are going to keep testimony to 2 minutes. And we will use a timer. If you go over that time, we'll ask you to wrap up when you get to that 2 minute mark. And with that, we will begin with some virtual testimony. Susan Arntz, after that, Brittany Hennessy. Ms. Arntz, please unmute yourself, introduce yourself, and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Arntz, and I serve as the city manager for the city of Mankato, and I'm here testifying on behalf of the city and Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Housing is a priority for our community, but this bill does not yet effectively support new housing development in our community. 50% of Mankato's housing stock is already multifamily, and we desire to preserve the existing middle housing that we have in the community. Mankato has a restriction on rental density in our single-family neighborhoods up to 25% per block in areas around the University of the Mankato State University here. This has helped maintain the stability and prevent the corporate conversions that we've seen throughout the country. As a university city, this is really critical for neighborhood integrity and preserving affordable owner-occupied housing in our community. The proposed changes may convert some of that existing residential neighborhoods into residential or rental neighborhoods. ADUs, duplexes, triplexes aren't always owned by the occupant. And so inserting those on single family lots has that potential to interfere with some of that balance. We do work with our developers in the community. At our council meeting last night, more than 50% of our agenda was working on affordable housing for our community. There are some unintended consequences of this bill that as you continue to work on it, we want you to think about. They include the parking minimum language. I perceive and know that I've had the experience of with future issues with eliminating parking, you'll have guest parking, the senior group homes, the caregivers for seniors, Meals on Wheels will not have delivery. I know I've got about 5 more seconds. So the one thing I really want you to hear is I don't want you to take community out of community development. Some of the provisions in this bill do that. I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Brittany Hennessy. After that, Mike McGuire.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate File 2229 and the Minnesota Starter Home Act. Again, I'm Brittany Hennessy, and I'm actually the executive director at Habitat for Humanity, serving Winona County. And we do build 1 to 2 homes a year. We repair 30 to 40 homes annually. And we're currently one of the only affordable home builders in the city of Winona. And so this bill actually proposes positive impacts in the work that we do. We here in Winona County face a projected demand right now of 1,460 homes, and by 2033, need an additional 610 units to meet this need. We're landlocked in many areas. We have limited places to build. And on top of that, very low vacancy rates. So our vacancy rate in current rentals is 1.7%. And so when we look at affordability for affordable rentals, that vacancy rate is at 0.6%. And that can be expanded, made possible by duplexes, ADUs, and buildings as such, as well as outdated zoning codes. Large minimum lot size requirements, restrictions on multifamily development prevent the construction of affordable housing. The lack of developable land further exacerbates the issue, making it difficult to expand housing options. So where the impact can come from this, the Minnesota Starter Home Act would reduce regulatory barriers and incentivize the development of smaller, more affordable homes, allowing working families to achieve home ownership by streamlining zoning and infrastructure costs. And this would fill a critical gap not addressed by other programs, ensuring that local housing solutions are accessible and financially viable for both developers and home buyers. Along with streamlining approval processes and decreasing costs and development timelines, statewide land use reform would diversify the types of housing our communities can build and is a critical step to achieving a healthy housing continuum. I will say, as Habitat Winona County, it is my dream to be able to build more with the land that we are granted to serve more families in creative ways. And we cannot move forward with our work without zoning reform that supports innovative housing solutions. Thank you, Chair Port, for championing these reforms. And thank you also all for the opportunity to testify. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Timoni. Next will be Mike McGuire, and after that, Evan Vogel. So you can come to the table as well. Mr. McGuire, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify regarding Senate File 2229, the Minnesota Starter Home Act. My name is Mike McGuire. That's spelled M-A-G-U-I-R-E. And I am the mayor of Eagan. I'm here representing today the Municipal Legislative Commission, a coalition of 18 cities representing nearly 1 million residents across the seven-county metropolitan area. We recognize and appreciate the intentions behind the legislation to address Minnesota's housing challenges. However, we must express significant concerns about the unintended consequences the bill would have on communities. Eagan and other MLC communities have been actively working to enhance our housing availability and affordability through locally led approaches. Unfortunately, this legislation threatens to undermine those efforts by imposing broad, rigid mandates that fail to account for the unique needs and circumstances of individual communities. Municipal Legislative Commission cities are deeply committed to addressing housing challenges through diverse and innovative strategies. In your packets, you'll find information sheets and examples on how each of our cities are addressing these issues. These efforts include comprehensive planning, removing barriers to development through targeted local policies, and investing in affordable housing that meets the specific needs of our residents. These initiatives reflect our commitment to creating a spectrum of housing options while balancing infrastructure capacity, public safety, and fiscal responsibility. Specific concerns with SS-229 include infrastructure capacity, strain on existing systems designed to support single-family housing and not multi-family density, and the underlying infrastructure there as well. Inadequate setbacks and lot sizes. In terms of its, the bill and the parameters in terms of bulk, it's grateful, and we're all grateful, I think, that we're seeing less snow in Minnesota. If this bill is implemented with these setbacks, I hope that continues. Otherwise, we'll have no place to put the snow when we plow the street. Stormwater management, increased impervious services, create higher density development, but could exacerbate storm runoff issues as well. There are a number of other issues. Erosion of public trust and loss of resident input is perhaps my most important one, and I want to highlight that for you. One person's streamlining of a process is another person's shutting out the community from the process. We have traditionally been able to work with our communities on developments, not through an administrative process, because we get to engage with our community and take ownership of the housing stock and the development in our community. The administrative process mandates shut the community out of that decision-making process and create a lack of ownership in the way the community develops and in our neighborhoods across our cities and across the state. So I would ask, as Administrator Ernst or Manager Ernst did, that as we go through this process of trying to create more diversity of housing in our communities, that we not write out our communities themselves. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Before we move to our next testifier, I want to welcome Senator Rasmussen to the committee, co-author, co-presenter. And we will continue with testimony with Evan Vogel. And after that, Nick Erickson. You're welcome to come forward as well.
Well, sure. I'm the first one that has to have the author next to me. Good afternoon, Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. My name is Evan Vogel. I'm the city administrator for the city of Cambridge, Minnesota, as well as a board member for the League of Minnesota Cities. In both 2019 and 2024, the city of Cambridge commissioned housing studies to explore and determine the city's housing needs. And I don't think it would be a surprise to anybody on this committee to know that both reports showed that we had critical needs in housing from multifamily to single-family detached housing. Following the study in 2019, Cambridge used public subsidy to attract and support significant investments in multifamily housing. In the 5 years between that study and 2024, the city added 600 apartment units. After the study in 2024, the city has explored options and partnered with developers, where the city anticipates adding between 600 to 700 detached single-family homes between 2024 and 2028. In total, the city will be adding well over 1,200 units of housing in a 10-year span, which for perspective is an increase in residential units of about 33% in a single decade. These changes came about because local decision makers were thoughtful and diligent in collecting data, making educated decisions, listening to the community, and providing local solutions to local problems. This allows cities to assess needs and abilities to accommodate parking, water, sewer, storm sewer infrastructure, as well as the ability to listen to and respond to the needs that are brought forth from the community. The city has negotiated in good faith with developers time and time again, sometimes holding to certain standards that it believes are in the best interests of both its current and future residents, and sometimes the city compromises or changes its position to accommodate or incentivize this development. This bill removes local input entirely in favor of development interests. It makes the argument that simply building houses, increasing density by right, removing practical city standards, that we, as a state, will see an improvement in housing prices. Instead, this bill will likely lead to an increase in developer profits over public interest as density is increased with little regard for available infrastructure. It will lead to an increase in investor ownership of property as investors buy older single-family homes to build new duplexes or quads on single-family lots, and will not improve affordability in any meaningful way until the supply of housing exceeds the demand for it. I'm asking all members to oppose Senate File 2229 and oppose efforts to restrict local decision-making and local solutions. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are some, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Nick Erickson. After that, Rihanna Lee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Erickson. I'm the Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. Our members are the developers, the builders, the remodelers, and their skilled trade partners who build the communities and places that we all call home. And it is our mission of homeownership opportunities for all Minnesotans that brings us here today to support the Minnesota Starter Home Act. Our housing market doesn't look like the rest of our neighboring states. Right now, we're missing 100,000 homes in this market. We have the highest median new home price in the region, and since 2021, new housing permits in the state have fallen 43%. And since 2005, our housing new home price growth has exceeded income growth by a factor of 7.5 times. This is the result of the status quo. Simply, we have a problem here that our neighboring states do not. Our biggest problem is that instead of readily providing the required density and market rate realities of our housing market, planning and zoning must be purchased from cities through the form of a variance in the plan unit development. In this process, transparency is lost, density is often lost, and costs almost certainly always rise. And even then, if you are able to build what would be classified as a starter home, it certainly would not be available at necessary price points to be available to the masses. This isn't good government, it isn't transparent, and would-be homebuyers almost certainly always lose. Now, this bill alone will not solve our state's housing challenges, but it and the rest of the Yes to Homes agenda is a great place to start. Because if you don't get land use right, frankly, nothing else matters when it comes to housing policy. Here in our state, new starter homes are an endangered species, and you can help change that. This isn't about control or community character. This is about one simple question. Do you believe that homeownership opportunities should be available to future generations of Minnesotans? My children deserve the same opportunities that my wife and I had, and I hope you think that your children and grandchildren do too. So I ask you to say yes today and vote for the Minnesota Starter Home Act. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Rihanna Lee. After that, Michelle Benson. Ms. Lee, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rihanna Lee. I'm the Legislative and Coalitions Director for the Americans for Prosperity chapter here in Minnesota. On behalf of AFP Minnesota and our thousands of activists across the state, I want to express our support for the Minnesota Starter Home Act. Last week at the Housing Press Conference, I heard many of you speaking our language, breaking barriers, empowering people, reducing regulatory burdens. Some of you may find yourselves more aligned with AFP than you ever imagined. We believe in listening to those closest to the problem and to solve the issues at hand, and just as we see in this diverse coalition supporting housing reform. Every individual's version of the American dream looks different, as are their paths to achievement. But one common universal thread is the foundational need to have a stable place to call home. Minnesota is facing a severe housing shortage, and with home prices significantly higher than the national average, puts for many that dream out of reach. We believe that the root of the crisis lies in excessive government intervention, restrictive zoning, land use, and building regulations that drive up costs and limit home construction. The Minnesota Starter Home Act offers a meaningful solution by reducing these regulatory barriers, allowing for more housing options. Expanding these options will increase supply, improve affordability, boost economic mobility, and enhance homeowner property rights. We strongly urge lawmakers to practice restraint when considering any type of mandate that will negate this initiative. We are very excited to see several bills rolling out that seek to alleviate the symptoms of the housing crisis in our state. This packet was hand-delivered to each of your offices that list out some additional ideas that we can take to alleviate this crisis. We very much urge your support for this bill and look forward to working together to ensure more affordable and accessible housing options. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Michelle Benson. After that, our last testifier, Thomas Elness. Ms. Benson, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair, committee members, Senator Port and Senator Rasmussen. I'm Michelle Benson, Director of Housing Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce represents 6,300 members, including more than 5,000 small businesses from every corner of the state. As a statewide entity, the Chamber is committed to fostering economic growth and opportunity across Minnesota. The lack of workforce housing is one of the top concerns of our members, and on their behalf, I want to thank the authors of Senate File 2229 for proposing solutions. I look forward to hearing other solutions to Minnesota's housing shortage. The lack of workforce housing has both long-term and short-term impacts on Minnesota's economy. Owning a home is widely acknowledged as a key to stable retirement. The longer people have to wait to buy a home, the later they start to build the equity that contributes to family stability and generational wealth. As you know, home ownership contributes to stable communities, and in the long term, economically stable families and stable communities are essential to Minnesota. In addition to these long-term impacts, the lack of workforce housing has immediate and short-term economic impact. The state is facing workforce shortages, but it's not just about the availability of people ready to work. These workers need a place to live. Approximately 100,000 housing units are needed to meet our current demand. If a worker can't find a home near work, it makes it harder for them to take a job. If businesses cannot hire, they cannot grow. Housing shortages contribute to slower economic growth. The price of starter homes moves based on supply and demand. We know the demand for workforce housing is high. So what are the solutions to increase the supply to meet that demand? How do we make it easier to build workforce housing in Minnesota? We believe the Minnesota Starter Home Act is one step in the right direction. We understand these changes raise a number of concerns, and as we engage with our local chambers, we've heard these concerns. It's essential to keep listening to all impacted parties to ensure the solutions will be effective in lowering the cost of a starter home. This is a statewide problem, and the proposed innovative ideas from across the state should be included in this discussion. We appreciate the efforts of the authors and collaborators, including Senators Port, Rasmussen, Bolden, and Dreheim. Your commitment to addressing housing issues is commendable. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and together we will find the solution to Minnesota's housing problem. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Our last testifier is Thomas Elness. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden and committee members. My name is Thomas Elness, and I serve as the State Advocacy Director with AARP Minnesota. On behalf of our more than 620,000 members statewide, many who have shared concerns about housing with us, thank you for considering Senate File 2229. AARP Minnesota is proud to be part of a wide-ranging statewide coalition committed to addressing the housing concern in Minnesota. AARP recognizes the need for more housing and the need for our state government to use available policy levers to encourage the construction of more housing units to ensure that people of all incomes and ability levels can afford to live in community. This includes encouraging the construction of accessory dwelling units and other missing middle housing, infill housing, and co-housing communities. SF 2229 proposes to increase housing options for older adults and increase housing supply by allowing more middle housing, meaning housing types in the middle of the housing spectrum between single detached houses and mid to high rise multifamily apartments and condos. Most importantly, the homes can accommodate people of all ages, abilities, and life stages. Lastly, I want to especially thank the bill authors for recognizing the need for those accessory dwelling units that I mentioned earlier in lines 3.11 and 3.12. In many ways, unpaid family caregivers are the backbone of our long-term care system in Minnesota, yet our policies are unnecessarily restricting Minnesotans from having the housing options needed to care for their loved ones. This bill, this language helps address that challenge. Thank you for your time, and we ask for your support.
Thank you to all the testifiers. Chair Port, do you have any comments before we turn to Senator Rasmussen?
Thank you, Chair Bolden. You know, whether intended or not, our current zoning restrictions have effectively made it illegal to build a starter home. And they have contributed to the increase of the racial homeownership gap, which is worse in Minnesota now than it was in the 50s. This bill legalizes duplexes, ADUs, and townhomes. It is a collective statewide solution to a collective statewide problem. We need to build more, build faster, and build more affordable homes. The system that facilitated this current crisis cannot address the scope of the problem. Although many cities are making great strides in building housing, only 14% of affordable housing goals have been met across the state. Housing reform will enable local leaders to address the challenges at the speed that's required. If we focus on who has the power rather than how to work together to find solutions, we'll never address the issue and Minnesotans will continue to suffer as a result. Minnesotans' robust protections around local infrastructure that currently exist continue to exist in this bill. Our current process already requires development to pay for necessary infrastructure improvements, and we fully support state-funded infrastructure, and we know that development has and always will have to pay its fair share. This bill does nothing to change those requirements for infrastructure. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my co-author, Senator Rasmussen.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator. I think it's just important for us to identify the problem first. And right now in Minnesota, the median cost of a new single-family home is over $540,000. And what that means is that that's putting homeownership out of reach for many hardworking Minnesotans. That is why I'm proud to be part of this bipartisan group of legislators to champion the Minnesota Starter Home Act. This proposal focuses on cutting red tape to increase the supply of starter homes, empowering the free market to meet demand. By doing so, we can help aspiring Minnesota homeowners and young families achieve the dream of buying their first home. The stakes are high in this debate. When Minnesotans must move farther from jobs, their families, and the communities that they grew up in just to afford a home, it does not only hurt their financial stability, but it holds back the economic prosperity of all of Minnesota. The ripple effects from this shortage of homes and the higher costs touch everyone in our state. Too many Minnesotans are unable to reach the American dream of home ownership because of government policies, and it's time for state leaders to take action to eliminate these barriers. So here's how we're going to legalize starter homes again with this bill. First, for homes connected to city sewer and water, local governments would need to allow 1/8 acre lots. Homeowners and developers can and will continue to build bigger on bigger lots, but government won't be able to stop a homeowner from building on a lot at least 1/8 of an acre. Many cities like Fergus Falls and others that I represent have many lots that are already smaller than this minimum. Accessory dwelling units and duplexes would be allowed in residential zones. In addition, this bill would legalize townhome construction, and townhomes are often able to be priced below $300,000 to help those first-time home buyers achieve homeownership. This bill also bans aesthetic mandates and parking mandates for the housing that's included in this bill. Requiring three-car garages, brick facades, and other aesthetic mandates drive up the cost of housing. This would ensure that requirements are focused on health and safety, not economic redlining. We would also ban cities from requiring homeowners associations for new developments. A developer or homeowner can still set up an HOA if they want to. A city simply won't be able to require them to do so. Requiring HOAs increases costs to new homeowners and discourages the development of starter homes. I do want to note that a development would still need to comply with any standards, performance conditions, or requirements, including the adequacy of existing public infrastructure imposed by a city to promote public health and safety. Additionally, developments would still need to follow state and federal law, including environmental and historic preservation requirements. And with that, Madam Chair, happy to turn it back to Senator Port to see if she has any more comments to add.
Senator Port, any other comments before we move to discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few more things to touch on. This bill requires or moves to a process of administrative review rather than planned unit developments or variances that often drive up the cost of pricing. This really moves zoning or permitting for smaller homes, for townhomes, and for duplexes and ADUs to the same process that's currently used for single-family homes. We did not specify the process in the bill, instead leaving it up to the cities because we heard from them loud and clear that their administrative processes look different and they want to have the ability to build that process in a way that works for them. So we allow each city to develop that process, and each city already has an existing process to approve single-family homes. For cities in which the council must approve new homes, the most likely outcome for placing that final approval is on the consent agenda, which is what they already do for single-family homes. It does allow for a public meeting anyway, even though this is an administrative process. Something that does not happen for single-family homes, but allows for that community conversation to continue and to exist for these developments, just like it currently does, but restricts that to one meeting, again, more than we currently allow for single-family homes. And finally, it does put a timeline requiring under existing statute that that everything except for that final building permit must be approved within 60 days, which is, again, under existing statute. But it retains the right for the city to deny the permit if there is a public health, safety, or welfare issue, or if there is not that existing infrastructure, as Senator Rasmussen said. And with that, I think that's a good overview of the bill, and we can take questions.
Members, questions and discussion? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. Thank you, Senator Port, Senator Rasmussen. Just a couple comments. You know, I signed on to all three of these bills to support the effort. And, you know, it's been 8-9 years of working on these topics. And, you know, I often think what would have happened if we would have got something done early on, 8 years ago. And how many units could we have built? We wouldn't have this discussion. And, you know, I appreciate the comments from the cities. I've had a lot of conversations, probably at least 50 conversations with different cities in the league. Thank them for their input. And I agree that there are some things in here that need to be tweaked. But I appreciate the work. And the comment about the 1,500 square foot lots and removing snow, in my experience, In your community, most 1,500 square foot lots or the smaller lots are in a homeowner association where the association does the snow removal and not the city for this type of case. You know, that might change. I think it's a fair point. I think it's something we need to look at. But I just wanted to point out to the committee, I think most of those smaller lots are in some kind of homeowner association that remove their own snow. You know, I tasked the league many, many years ago in a lot of cities. If these aren't the solutions, then what are the solutions? And I'm still waiting. And, you know, one of the testifiers commented about developers buying up property and developing it, creating more units, becoming housing providers. And I think that's the goal, is we need more units, however they come. And I've said this for years, that we cannot buy our way out of this problem. So unfortunately, I agree with the cities. It would be nice not to have the government come in and do a one-size-fits-all. I do not want that. But we're at a point where my kids and my grandkids aren't going to be able to afford a home. And that's the underlying goal, is to have the next generation be able to afford a home. What is the other option? What has been happening now? And that is for government-subsidized apartments to be built. And the last project I saw was in southern Minnesota, so rural Minnesota, away from the metro. And the average cost of one apartment building, one apartment unit, not building, but one unit, I think the project had 40 units in it. So just one of those apartments was $431,000 for one apartment. That is not solving anything. So I think this is a good collection of mainly free market solutions. I applaud the effort. I know Senator Lucero has been really involved, Senator Bolden, obviously Senator Rasmussen, a lot of people have been, and I appreciate it. I know there's some things that need to be tweaked. I guess my question for Senator Port is, what is the pathway of this bill today, and are we going to hear it back?
Senator Port.
Thank you, Senator Dreheim. So the path for this bill today is to send it to State Gov. It is unclear. I would love to hear these back. I think they move out of our committee, but it will depend on State Gov's decisions on what they do with them. It is likely between now and State Gov that there will be some sort of bringing together of the bills that we hear, so that they don't all go to State Gov, but that is the current plan. And then eventually these would go to the floor independent of the other housing omnibus work.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Senator Port. I'm good with that. There are some things that I, just being transparent like I like to be, that I do think need to be adjusted, but I applaud the work. I applaud the direction that all three of these bills are going in. And with that, I'll let other members speak. Thank you.
Other comments, members? Senator Abler.
I was trying to let other goes first, but I'll go behind my good colleague, Mr. Senator Dreheim. Well, I actually appreciate the enthusiasm of the crowd and the members. I do not share that enthusiasm. Frankly, I appreciate the goal, and I'm not sure that my cities are the ones standing in the way of this. Anoka is an old town. Coon Rapids has done tons of infill, carriage homes, twin homes, and all that. Andover is a growing city, and they have their own way going. And just frankly, an apartment that costs $430,000 is still going to cost $430,000 under this. Maybe a change of siding a little bit. But I just want to caution people what you're asking for. Be careful what you ask for. I appreciate the coalition, how often you get the Americans for Prosperity agreeing with AARP. Way to go. I'm happy for you. It's mark your calendar. And Senator Rosen, Rasmussen and Port, I know your passion on this, but I think you're missing some of the what's going to happen in reality. I think builders are fine individuals, but I think that the reason the cities have their planning commissions is they keep the quality up. This says nothing about, they have to meet the code, but code is a pretty minimal thing. And so the question this bill says is, do we want people who are thoughtful, hired by our residents of our cities, who have put their hugest assets into that town and made their lives there, to review a project, or do you want builders, no offense intended, to drive the down to a minimalist level. So how mediocre of a house could I build? And frankly, I'm not a big fan of beige vinyl, but there's a time for that, and I'm glad somebody makes that, and there's a letter for them selling it. But I'm not sure that's everybody's dream, to have that 8 to an acre with 7.5 feet apart. And that would be allowable. And so to the AARP people, I love you guys. I have done so much work for senior care. But do you want to, so is what you're here saying is like, well, at least my kids can get a house. At least they got a house. It's a little, it's not that good of a house, but it's a house. Is that what you want? Is that their dream? Do they have to live here for a while and then move out to something that's a decent house with a little bigger yard and maybe some, you know, not jammed in like it's tight? That's what this allows. And I think that there's a balance between regulation and hardly, I don't consider a city government, but they're nothing like the feds or we are in terms of deciding what all has to be done. Maybe some are, but if the citizens care, they could vote them out and get people in that care about this stuff. Just want to caution you about that. And I just, one of the city testifiers commented, what is the incentive for this builder now to lower their prices? I don't see anything here about price controls. So you're going to now reduce the price of this house home by $100,000 or something. And it should be $100,000 lower, but who's going to get that money? Well, it's going to go on the property tax rolls because it's going to be sold for retail. And so now you're going to have, it's not going to, be careful of what you're asking for. And so if you want people to live on postage stamps with no setbacks and no parking, I'd vote for this bill. But there's a reason that cities have parking rules, and you don't have to have any parking. None, minimum, no minimums, zero parking. You park your car at the gas station down the road or somewhere. And so I don't think that it's our job to do this. I think it's our job to job own and to encourage people and encourage the cities who want to do this, Anoka who's doing it, Coon Rapids who's doing it already, to be allowed to do it. And I really respect the people who are trying to make a difference. I know less than the two chief authors of this bill who I have a great affinity for, but I don't think when the dust settles, we'll tell our grandkids, well, at least you got a house. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Rasmussen, response?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Draham and Senator Abler, for the comments on the bill. I think the fundamental question is, right now, if you're a hardworking Minnesotan who earns maybe $50,000 to $70,000 a year, it's really tough to go buy a house for more than $500,000 and to be able to afford that mortgage. And I really view this as the American dream being under threat. You know, when I'm out in my community, I talk to folks, they said, hey, you told me that if I went to school, studied hard, worked hard, got a job, that the next step on that American dream was home ownership and maybe being able to start a family. And that's what is missing right now. And we've let regulations at the local level effectively make it illegal for people in certain areas of the state to get into that home ownership. And when I go back to, I look at the city of Fergus Falls. It has many houses in the city of Fergus Falls today that would be illegal to build in many communities across the state. And these were built by veterans coming home from World War II with the GI Bill, who built what they could afford. And maybe that was a three bedroom with 1.5 bathrooms and it didn't have an attached garage, but that's what they raised their families in. And to now say that those houses shouldn't even be available as an option for hardworking Minnesotans, I think we have to take a look at the power that we are giving to local units of government to deny people homeownership. I think the aspiration ought to be that we allow Minnesotans to pick which communities they live in, not let communities pick which Minnesotans get to live there. And I think that's the fundamental question here. And I think this bill in particular, when we look at the standards that have been adopted that protect public safety, that protect any type of infrastructure needs that the city have, the city will still have local control if this bill ends up in the statute books. They'll still have local control over many aspects within their city. And I think these are the common sense approaches that can help make that American dream a reality for many hardworking Minnesotans where the status quo isn't working for them today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Paul.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. Minnesotans all across our state have said that we need more affordable options and we need more housing options. And they've been saying it for a very, very long time. But we have yet to do anything to really change the future of housing here in Minnesota. So, Senator Abler, thank you for your comments, but I have to respectfully disagree that this bill does not go to address the fact that we're not demanding construction standards. We are saying that restrictive aesthetic mandates is what we're addressing. That means that we still want people to meet construction standards when they're building these homes, but that cities are not restricting building by requesting that there be certain types of aesthetics in these homes that drive up the costs hugely for these projects. So the types of homes that working families, first-time home buyers, seniors, young folks are looking to buy, it's just unaffordable. I especially want to just call out my support for the accessory dwelling units to be built in residential zoning. That's something that has been a big issue for me, and many of my constituents have brought up the need for that, specifically so that our seniors and parents can age with family and still live nearby. And then our adult children who are growing and can't afford to move out because housing is so expensive, but they can still live independently. And so having, whether it's attached or detached, ADUs being allowed is a big part of making sure that we have affordable housing options here in the state of Minnesota. So I hope that we will support this bill because it is absolutely necessary. Minnesota's been calling out for this, and we have to do something. Thank you.
Other questions or comments, members? Senator Lucero.
At the risk of sounding like a broken record, we'll start by saying I appreciate all the testifiers, all the voices that have participated in this ongoing conversation, not just this year, but the ongoing conversation that even well predates me. It sounds like it's been 8 or 9 years, as I heard Senator Dreheim speak. And I also echo that this is still a work in progress, and I appreciate those that are putting the effort in to try to make this as good as possible as the committee hearings continue to go on. One of the things that caught my attention, I think it was this past weekend, it might have been all the days blurred together, but I think it was over this past weekend, I heard an article or saw an article, and this is from Texas, and apparently the Richardson Independent School District, and the headline said, Richardson Independent School District to close 5 schools. And I'll just read 2 sentences from this article. So this was dated February 23rd. The Richardson Independent School District is set to close 4 elementary schools starting next year and a pre-K campus starting the following year as part of its Project Right Size. Lower in the article, it says, on any given day, there are more than 9,000 empty seats in Richardson Independent School District classrooms, according to figures released by the district. Elementary schools in question are each at less than 60% capacity. And so when I saw this article, I was reminded, and again, this is over the weekend, I was reminded, I think it was the realtors that had testified earlier, a metric that a median priced or a median income family in Minnesota can no longer afford a median income home in Minnesota. And for the young people, who are starting their families, they're obviously going to be with the younger kids, the children, going to these elementary schools or pre-K facilities. And in those communities where these young people cannot afford to buy a starter home, one of the downstream impacts from this article could very much actualize here in Minnesota, is school young families will be prohibited from purchasing homes in communities, and then downstream, those very school districts will have to consider consolidating because the young families who can no longer afford starter homes can move into the communities and therefore are not raising their families with their young children in those school districts. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. I thought this committee and the bill authors would be potentially interested in this because there are many, this is a tangled web of many different players and many different stakeholders and many different people as part of this conversation. And this, I think, just adds as another element to that very real conversation. And again, I cannot emphasize enough how I appreciate everybody who's been part of these conversations to try to come up with solutions for what we can do for our young people. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments or questions, members? All right. I will just add to the chorus of gratitude to the bill authors and the coalition. I know a lot of work has gone in, both in the last 8-9 months and prior to that. This is a discussion that we should be having. I appreciate the remarks about from Senator Dreheim about wondering, if we had taken action, done things differently 8 or 9 years ago, where would we be today? I don't want us, whether it's us or different senators, to be at this table 8 or 9 years from now thinking, what would it be if we had done this now? This committee has done excellent work. In the last biennium, we invested unprecedented historic resources into housing, largely in terms of building and down payment assistance. And the next step of that is to be sure that homes can be built so people can buy them. As I talk to young people in my community, many of them are just resigned to the fact that that homeownership is not in their future. And that it doesn't have to be that way. We, again, have had many conversations in this committee about the need for supply, and that is across the state. And it is, we have tried encouragement. We have been encouraging for some time, and that is not enough. And so for a statewide problem, we need a statewide solution. And so thank you again to the authors for all of your work to bring a solution. And this does not certainly solve all of the housing crisis across the state, but it is a piece in the puzzle and a necessary one to be sure that we can build all different types of homes because all of them are needed. So with that, Senator Rasmussen, any closing comments from you? And then I will move to Chair Port for closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also just want to end with gratitude for the group of legislators that are working on this, for the diverse set of stakeholders who have been engaging on this really important issue. And I also want to thank this bill's critics. I think I've appreciated their feedback and criticisms, and much of their feedback is reflected in the bill before you today. And I'm confident that those conversations will continue with both proponents and opponents of this bill as it moves through the process. And Madam Chair, I truly think that this could be one of the most consequential bills this legislature considers this year. And it's because it deals with such a profound crisis, which is helping Minnesotans into homeownership, and it affects our constituents in such a profound way. If we think about the folks that are at the margin of who maybe without this bill wouldn't be able to afford to get into that first starter home, to build equity, to grow their family, I think that's why this bill is so important to me and many of the advocates you've heard from today. And so I also just with especially the budget context that we're looking at this year, and as we look at the tails, this bill doesn't cost the state of Minnesota anything. And I don't think, Madam Chair, that we'll be able to subsidize our way out of the housing crisis that we have in this state. We need solutions like this that reduce red tape, that allow the free market to build the kinds of homes that people want and can afford. And I'm really excited to see this bill move through the process. I appreciate the robust discussion today and know that for myself and Senator Port, our doors are open as people have questions and feedback on this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Chair Port, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as we've had conversations over the last several years about the housing needs in Minnesota, it crosses the spectrum of every single piece of housing. This bill today addresses one small section of that. Those single-family homes, smaller single-family homes, starter homes, duplexes, townhomes, and ADUs. And I think it is a critical piece of the puzzle as we are talking about needing to close the racial home ownership gap. We want to entice workers to come to Minnesota and our Minnesota young people to stay in Minnesota as they begin their adult lives. So this is a critical piece of that. I am incredibly proud of the work that we've done over the last few years where we made historic investments, particularly in production. But that money only works if the production actually happens. And much of that money, particularly in the metro with the metro sales tax for housing, continues now into the tails to go directly into communities. So we are also funding this. We are funding production. But again, that tax money only is effective for our communities if the homes that our communities need can actually be built. So I am incredibly grateful for Senator Rasmussen, my co-author on this, but also all of the authors that have played a part in this over the last several years. Senator Dreheim for introducing me to this topic 5 years ago. And I think, you know, the more that we have these conversations, the better the bill gets. So I look forward to continued conversation as we move this bill along its path. And with that, Madam Chair, I would ask that Senate File 2229, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to state government.
That being the motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes. Senate File 2229, as amended, is recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Thank you both. Next, we will move to Senate File 2286. Senator Clark, as you are ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Chair Bolden. To start, I will offer the author's amendment A3 to get this into the state we want it and that we can discuss.
Senator Clark moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Senator Clark.
Thank you. I'm pleased to present Senate File 2286, which builds on the prior bill's concept to address the missing middle of housing construction. The lack of housing isn't limited just to single-family homes. The lack of apartment units in high-demand areas is driving up rents across the state. This includes both market rate and affordable units. Allowing multifamily housing to be built in commercial zones will help boost the local tax base and help revive main streets across our state. We need to make it easier for main streets to thrive, and this bill does that. Does it by creating homes along central corridors where people want to live, work, and play. We know that the problem is real and deep in affording housing in Minnesota. 600,000 Minnesotans are paying more than 30% of their income on housing. 49% of renters pay more than 30%, and 26% of renters pay over 50%. Yep, 26% pay over 50%. In fact, as you heard before, there's not a single county in Minnesota where a family earning the median income can afford the median price, as Senator Lucero pointed out. And for the first time, nurses earning the median nurse's salary cannot afford a median-priced home in Minnesota. Our housing shortage is at least 100,000 homes short. And what we have before you is part of a collective statewide solution to this collective statewide problem. That's my goal. Build more, build faster, and build more affordably. Zoning rules should provide certainty about what can be done and what cannot be done with that property, but our rules aren't predictable and they aren't always applied consistently and evenly. So here's how this bill addresses it. Development with at least 13 units as well as mixed-use buildings with commercial use on the ground floor and equal space devoted to residents are required to be allowed in all commercial areas, with a few exceptions. This bill places additional specific restrictions on the limitations which municipalities can place on multifamily commercial developments. It limits administrative reviews and it provides affordability bonuses. I think we've heard a few examples of kids and grandkids saying, I'm worried about being able to afford housing. My kids share that. They hope that I'll buy the house next door, and I say, I really can't afford it either. When I was door knocking apartments around the University of Minnesota just 5-6 weeks ago, what did I hear? Help me afford to stay in the district. Help me to afford to stay in Northeast and Southeast Minneapolis. And we hear that time and time again. So here's what my bill does to help this. It directly addresses the critical shortage of housing. It strengthens Main Street from Elysian to Eveleth to Eden Valley by retaining commercial throughout the district and adds customers to help those businesses thrive. And it makes housing more affordable. Thank you for the opportunity to introduce and present my bill.
Thank you. All right, we will move to testimony. Again, we have a number of testifiers, so we will ask people to stick to about that 2 minutes. First, we will hear from Susan Arntz. After that, Jason Weddle. Ms. Arntz, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. Again, I'm Susan Arntz, and I serve as the city manager for the city of Mankato, and I'm testifying on behalf of the city and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. As I mentioned earlier, 50% of Mankato's housing stock is already multifamily. Many cities in Greater Minnesota, including Mankato, allow residential mixed-use construction in some commercial areas. We appreciate the restrictions that are already in this proposed bill as far as the heavy industrial areas. When determining whether a site is suitable for residential development, there are many important questions a city will consider besides whether the land is just available. We want to ensure residents, specifically kids and seniors, have safe access to parks and playgrounds, as well as routes to schools and other services. We want to ensure that they're not too close to heavily trafficked streets and that can cause danger to pedestrians and pollution problems. Not every commercial lot is suitable for housing and cities need to be part of this discussion. We are concerned about limiting concerns with development to just about development for traffic, noise, or nuisance except for developments above 300 units. In the city of Mankato, we have about 3 projects that have ever had units of that size, and these concerns can be very real even for smaller developments, and that will rule out many of the considerations in almost all communities in Greater Minnesota. We are concerned that the affordable housing bonus could result in buildings that are out of scale with the surrounding neighborhood. While we work with our builders to develop affordable multifamily housing, little protections are there to keep it that way once the permit is issued, unless there is a government subsidy where we can tether an agreement to the project. We would ask you to reconsider the administrative approval requirements. The larger the redevelopment, the more important a non-administrative review should occur. And then lastly, neighborhood meetings are really important and make projects better. I can point to a number of examples in my short tenure here in this community where neighborhood meetings have taken place, and sometimes they require more than one meeting, one to listen, one to come back and share some of the changes. Removing them does weaken community engagement. As I mentioned earlier, please do not take community out of community development. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Jason Weddle. After that, Cecil Smith.
Thank you, Chair Bolden and members of the committee. My name is Jason Weddle, and I'm the Prior Lake City Manager. I'm also a licensed civil engineer, and formerly in my earlier career, I was the Director of Land Development for a national home builder here in the Twin Cities. I'm testifying today on behalf of the MLC and the 18 cities that make up our organization, where roughly 80% of new home construction is occurring currently in the Twin Cities. We have to respectfully oppose this bill, and the underlying basis is really problematic for us for a number of reasons. Using my city as an example, Prior Lake is 95% residential, 5% commercial. So from a tax capacity standpoint, we are heavily reliant on our existing residents to foot the bill when it comes to our property taxes. By not allowing more commercial development and taking away that opportunity as a city that's still growing and has greenfield development, we're now forcing our residents to get into their vehicles and drive to other communities just to get their basic needs and services met rather than being able to meet those needs in our own community. So that loss of commercial is a big deal for us. 2 years ago, we started a full-time fire department. It was a public safety need we had, and our community recognized that need. That was a very costly decision we had to make to add 12 full-time firefighters. That cost got borne almost exclusively by our residential homeowners, because we do not have a commercial base to spread that across. And when we are talking to our residents, some of them are elderly, fixed incomes, all of these extra costs impact them, and they have to figure out how they're going to meet their monthly bills when they're living on fixed incomes. And finally, when we speak with our school districts, loss of commercial property is a big deal for them. Their revenues for their schools from property tax perspective, they benefit from having commercial property in our community. So any loss of commercial would be hurtful for our schools. Just a couple of the other items. The 75-foot building height is a great concern for us in Prior Lake. The tallest building is 45 feet. This is 30 feet taller than any of our existing buildings. And with the added density bonus, if there's an affordability component to it, this bill would allow another 35 feet on top of that. So you'd have a 110-foot tall building in Prior Lake, where currently the tallest building is 45 feet, completely out of scale with our cities. The no parking requirements is the other item that we're very concerned with, and I'll give you an example of a project we just approved a couple of years ago. It was 168-unit senior housing, shallow subsidy for 80% AMI seniors. We had our parking requirements. The developer said, we don't need that much parking. It's a senior building. And the city capitulated. We agreed with the developer, said, you're the experts. We'll put in fewer parking spaces. Ever since that building was fully occupied, I get complaints every single year about the lack of parking because they did not put enough in. So to say that no parking is required is a concern. Ultimately, we feel this bill would strip our cities and our citizens of all input on new projects and hand it over to for-profit developers who are not concerned about the long-term viability and sustainability of our communities, but rather making a profit and moving on to the next city. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll hear from Cecil Smith. After that, Ben Helvick-Anderson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cecil Smith. I'm the President and CEO of the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. We represent 2,300 members who serve over 600,000 renters who make their home in more than 320,000 rental homes provided by our members. I am here to testify in support of Senate File 2286. In 2016, MHA developed messaging and a framework around housing policy. It was and remains produce, preserve, and protect. Produce more housing, preserve our existing housing, and protect renters from predatory conduct. Many others have adopted a similar approach for a balanced but comprehensive effort to improve our housing in Minnesota. Sadly, that was 9 years ago. It was 7 years since the Minnesota Housing Task Force made similar recommendations to the governor and legislature, a task force on which I served as MHA's representative. And we now need 100,000 more homes. Finally, today is a hopeful day because we have a meaningful policy change before us, a positive incremental step that will enable more housing to be produced in desirable and appropriate localities. Multifamily housing is an excellent choice throughout the arc of one's life. Multifamily is a preferred land use option in premium locations. It is more energy efficient than other housing, and it accelerates population density so that local economies thrive and can support new community amenities. For these reasons and more, we thank Senator Clark, my senator from the great Northeast Minneapolis, for bringing forward the bill, and we recommend passage of Senate File 2286. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Ben Helvick-Anderson. After that, Breanne Rothstein. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden and committee members. My name is Ben Helvick-Anderson, and I'm the Vice President of Policy and Organizing at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. I'm here to support Senator Clark's bill. Beacon is a collaborative of congregations, of over 60 congregations, the owner-operator of 24 buildings in the metro, most of which are supportive housing, and a developer working to expand access to deeply affordable housing. We support this bill because we believe that affordable housing belongs in all communities, and we need much more of it. We and the rest of our industry will never reach our housing goals without the changes proposed in this bill. Specifically, we support the administrative review process, which will judge our developments according to a city's comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan of nearly every community we encounter calls for the deeply affordable housing that Beacon has proposed. But over the 20 years we have developed deeply affordable housing, we've had to partake in lengthy public meetings, often with the Planning Commission and the City Council, to get approval. Beacon spends hundreds of thousands of dollars on staff time preparing for these public meetings and organizing community support necessary to overcome opposition. Our latest development took four different public hearings over 4 months to get approval. This bill would eliminate this elevated level of scrutiny, additional risks, and costs to which affordable housing developments are subject to. We also support the clarity this bill creates around standards a city can impose on a development like parking. For example, most of our residents are transitioning from homelessness and do not and will not own a vehicle during their time they call our developments home. Cities often require numerous parking slots per unit, and we must seek an exemption for those. We have had to add parking spaces at $25,000 or more per stall for structured parking to developments which will not get used. These costs eat up scarce dollars available for affordable housing that we must continue to fundraise to make these developments possible. Thank you, Senator Clark, for bringing forward this bill, and thank you, Chair Bolden, and members of this committee for the opportunity to testify in support of it.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Breanne Rothstein. After that, Sarah Larson. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Breanne Rothstein, and I'm here today representing myself as a 20-year city planner and new business owner. I'm here speaking in favor of Senate File 2286 to allow multifamily housing in commercial districts and to provide for the removal of common performance standard barriers to multifamily housing. I've worked in many cities over the years as staff and as a consultant. I've personally attended over 500 public meetings, Planning Commission, City Council, and neighborhood meetings. And I heard you liked data. I have one data piece, which is 12, which is how many multifamily projects I have seen go down at City Council in my career, which to me feels like a lot. And that's after months of hard work from city staff, developers, consultants, and goes down due to the testimony of a few vocal residents who live nearby. I'm here representing that experience combined with my passion and knowledge for how it could be. This particular bill I'm supporting for the following reasons. One, allowing multifamily housing in commercial districts is easy. The development type, scale, and location are closely matched. Therefore, many of the same standards for commercial apply to multifamily housing. Commercial districts are often close to third places or destinations, such as shopping and entertainment, and nearer to transit if available. Placing housing there just makes sense. And two, cities have already designed infrastructure and traffic management to accommodate commercial in these areas. Commercial is most often a more intense use than multifamily with the impacts to city infrastructure. Three, it's already happening all over and it meets market demand. Places like Southdale, Nicollet Avenue, Heart of the City, Penn American, and even small town Main Street are seeing these projects go in and adding to the vibrancy of the neighborhood, but often have a long rezoning or planned unit development process that takes time and costs money. I would also like to add that tax base is a big factor, and I have seen several case studies where market rate multifamily housing is actually more tax base and tax value than a commercial property with lots of parking around it. And finally, this particular bill, I believe, is more palatable than others from my perspective and advances housing the fastest with the least preemption. It does not have some of the same barriers as the others, and the time is now to do something to make it easier for community developers to advance housing. You have lots of choices and tough decisions ahead of you as the session continues, so please consider advancing Senate File 2286. It won't be perfect, but it's time for change. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next will be Sarah Larson. After that, Claire Vanderik. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, I am Sarah Larson. I'm a principal at Landon Group. As affordable housing consultants, I and my company has been involved in the development or rehab of nearly 7,000 affordable units throughout the state. But the hard truth, usually not acknowledged, is that my company, I, have seen hundreds of units that were economically viable and never built. Here's one example. In 2021, a developer proposed a market rate housing development, nearly 200 units, five stories, in a western suburb. It complied with the densities called for in the comprehensive plan. At one of the multiple required public hearings, council members said things like, "I love this. This is an infinitely better use of the land." Not a single city resident attended that meeting. In 2022, due to market conditions, the developer opted to make the project 100% affordable with units for homeless households. They went back to council and proposed buildings with the same height and density as the market rate. The city council then said things like, "Why are you making it so tall? Why are you not building townhomes? This feels very large." By 2023, December, we obtained federal funding and state resources that were allocated by this body to construct the building. In February, the developer went back to council. They had changed the design to be shorter and reduced the density to half the original proposal. The city council chambers were standing room only. Neighbors in opposition had been crowdsourcing funding to support their efforts. The result? Not a single council member said they were willing to support the development moving forward. The developer returned the $25 million in funding, including federal resources. The proposed legislation will not shut out local government. Local governments create comp plans which require public input. This legislation will allow housing to be built in the places the city designated for multifamily housing. This will allow affordable housing to be built everywhere because it is needed everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will hear from Claire Vanderik, and after that, Anne Mavity. Ms. Vanderik, please pronounce your name correctly for me and proceed.
Thank you. You got it close. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 2286. My name is Claire Vanderik. I'm here before you today with 17 years of experience in the real estate industry, the last 10 of which my career focused in affordable housing development. I've led or supported teams in developing over 1,400 units of housing, income and rent restricted across the country, the majority of which is here in the state of Minnesota. In August of last year, I launched Doyen Development to pursue my passion of working closely with community to bring real estate solutions to the challenges that they face. I'm also a lifelong Minnesotan. I grew up in Sherburne County. I attended high school and college in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and I've lived in South Minneapolis for about 15 years. I'm here today to voice my support for the policy framework outlined in Senate File 2286 because a statewide policy that increases clarity in land use process for everyone by allowing administrative approvals for projects that meet community's goals of increasing housing supply in the downtown core is good for everyone. As a real estate developer, one of the earliest challenges that a project can face is the uncertainty in the critical path to the land use approvals. It is not uncommon for policies to conflict with one another, for there to be a lack of clarity in the administrative versus public hearing approvals, or even for political shifts to arise that change the project's direction. This uncertainty translates into added time, complexity, and cost, which increases the subsidy need, lowers the annual production of housing overall, and in the worst case scenario, leads to a project cancellation. Over the course of my career as an affordable housing developer, I've personally led projects where conflicting policies and interdepartmental goals, such as parking minimums versus housing density, have dramatically impacted deal feasibility and elongated the development process. I've also had to make the difficult decision of canceling a project pursuit due to shifting political winds that left too much uncertainty for the project to continue. Addressing the affordable housing crisis requires a multifaceted approach. Cities must be housing ready, a phrase that's often used by the nonprofit Strong Towns, to describe cities that maintain land use policies that are prepared to advance housing proposals as quickly as possible. These policies are meant to create and to remove barriers that may block much needed housing from being created. They empower staff to make the administrative approvals and advance the projects that meet the city's goals for development of housing investment. I'm sure there's no one in this room that would disagree that that access to quality, safe, affordable housing has become a key issue in our state. And I believe that Senate File 2286 makes great strides and to ensure our communities are prepared to meet that need. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today.
Thank you for your testimony. And our last testifier, Ann Mavity, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bolden, Chair Port, and members of the committee. My name is Ann Mavity. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of 2286, Transforming Main Street Act. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership and co-chair of the Yes to Homes Coalition that represents unexpected partners within the world of housing advocates and beyond, including healthcare, food shelves, AARP, and more. I served also as a three terms as a city council member, including being on the board of Metro Cities and chair of that board, and also served on the board of the League of Minnesota Cities. All of this is to say, I understand the complexities of all these various perspectives on this issue. The bottom line why we need this legislation is that our current local housing approval processes across Minnesota have failed to produce the housing that everyone agrees that we need. We have collectively burdened the housing production process with all these regulatory requirements that have prevented the market from responding to the demand for more supply. This bill and the package of all these related bills helps address these obstacles and remove regulatory barriers. This legislation maintains the key components of our current local controls processes, but it streamlines when and how these components are implemented, and it helps clarify the process, creating predictability in expectations and timelines. A couple examples I wanted to highlight. It allows cities to require mixed use where multifamily is built in commercial zones, with commercial on the first floor. And this ensures cohesion in these commercial districts. And in fact, the housing could be that project that spurs development in these commercial districts as it brings people and consumers to the community. And one important component I want to highlight is affordability. While more housing overall will absolutely help control rising costs, our biggest gaps are where the market by itself isn't always delivering. And that's regarding affordability, especially for our lowest wage workers and vulnerable neighbors. This bill lays out provisions that provide allowances for projects offering apartments that are affordable, including not requiring commercial on the first floor and modest density bonuses. The status quo is simply not working. And this bill represents thoughtful, measured improvements to removing these regulatory barriers and allowing more housing so Minnesota can thrive.
Thank you to all the testifiers. Senator Clark, any other comments before we move to member discussion?
I think thank you, Chair Bolden. I think Ms. Mavity's closing put it well. I'd emphasize that this is to really help and support commercial on Main Street and has a whole lot of housing that we get to build on top. So it helps both, and I think Senator Dreheim and, as of Thursday, Senator Paugh for being co-authors on this. This is a big step forward.
Discussion, members. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator Clark, for being the chief author and trying to push for some solutions for more housing units. I do appreciate it. Like I said on the first bill, I do think there are some things that we need to tweak on this bill, but I appreciate the work. I appreciate the input from various communities on it. I just wanted to make sure everybody stood that I do think there is things on all three of these bills that we need to address, depending on how it comes back to the committee. Thank you.
Other questions or comments, members? Well, before I turn it back to you then, Senator Clark, Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Clark, thank you for carrying this bill and for all of your work on it. I love this bill. I maybe love it more than my own bill. I think that this is a really critical piece of the puzzle when we look at the most needed housing in the state of Minnesota, which is deeply affordable housing for people at 30% AMI and lower. We have such little of that housing, and we are nowhere near meeting the need. And this bill is really one of the ways that we can increase that kind of housing to be built in communities who need it. I will also say, after the 2023 session, we took a tour of Minnesota, of greater Minnesota, up north, to the west, down south, through the state, and we heard over and over and over that there were businesses and communities across Minnesota who are trying to grow and who do not have housing available for their workers. Many times they were looking for apartments or townhomes and condos and things like that for folks to live in, and just could not get those projects done. There were main streets that are dying in greater Minnesota, because there's no place for workers to live, to work on Main Street. And this would have the added bonus of being able to keep that commercial districts, or even entice in new commercial, as you alluded to, Senator Clark, along with, you know, building that housing for people. I think this is a fantastic bill. We are certainly open to continued conversation about it, but I appreciate all of the feedback that we've gotten, and I think that this is a really important step to move forward.
Thank you. I will just add, I thank you for bringing this bill. I think it is another step, a way to limit some barriers for building livable, walkable communities where people want to live. I think it's win-win. I think it's win for businesses, and I think it's a win for families. And these are the neighborhoods, the communities where people want to live. And so, you know, right now it is, you know, under our current system, it really is not allowed or very infrequently to have affordable multifamily housing in these livable parts of our community. And so this would take a step in that direction. This would allow that and allow people to live affordably, you know, where they want to be. So thank you very much. Any closing comments before we move your bill?
Thank you, Chair Bolden. And thank you as well to Chair Port for her comments as well. I think we've done a good job admiring the problem for many years, and this is time to move this forward. As Senator Dreheim said, there are changes and improvements that we can make. Just half an hour before this committee, I was meeting with folks giving me good direct feedback on how to improve this bill. And I welcome that conversation, and I look forward to continuing that conversation. But in the end, we need to make it cheaper for folks to be, we may need to lower the cost of housing. We need to find more options for people to be able to build housing. So, as I heard Senator Dreheim said, so his kids and his grandkids can live where they want to live. And selfishly, I want my kids to be able to live close to where I dwell as well. And so with that, Chair, I ask that Senate File 2286 as amended is recommended to pass and referred to, I believe, state and local government.
That is the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes, and your bill is on its way. All right, members, that brings us to the end of our agenda today. We will continue the conversation on zoning and land use on Thursday. In addition to that, Senators Lucero and Pa will present their bill on HOA and common interest community reform. Thursday is a full agenda, members, and the public have been notified of the potential for late committee. If we need to get through all of our business, we will recess and come back at 5:15 on Thursday if we need to. That being the end of our agenda, and there being no further business before us, we are adjourned.